Last week we covered several of the five Tashlumei Chavala. We discussed Tzar, Sheves, Ripui. This week we're focusing, at least the beginning, on Boshes, humiliation, embarrassment. The Ramah brings very briefly, very tersely, a ruling of the Rivash. The Ramah says, Hamavaza Kohen, Boshta Yosu Gedolim Ibeish Afer. One who insults, who humiliates a Kohen, the seriousness of the offense is greater than one who humiliates an ordinary Jew. Rivash is actually quite an interesting tshuva. The Rivash begins that somebody had insulted, cursed a Kohen, he cursed him and his ancestors, he called him, I guess, so-and-so, son of a so-and-so, and the community wanted to punish him, and they felt that he's deserving of special punishment because his victim was a Kohen. So the person who wrote to the Rivash wasn't quite sure about this. He says he thinks that that was actually a Gentile custom. He says the Gentiles, either the Ishmaelim or the Goyim, depending on the Girsaher, they have a custom that someone who curses a relative of their prophet, whatever that means, they get especially severe punishment. So he thinks that this Jewish custom might have derived from the Gentile custom, and he asked the Rivash for his opinion, is there a Jewish source for this? So the Rivash doesn't really have a direct source for the idea that someone who insults a Jewish Kohen is deserving of a more serious punishment, more serious compensation than someone who insults an ordinary Jew. But the thrust of his argument at some length is that there is a mitzvah d'oraisa to respect and honor Kohanim. The Kiddushto, the Gemara says, thou shalt sanctify him. He goes first. He goes first in Kriyas HaTorah. He goes first in other certain other contexts. People sometimes let Kohanim wash first and do other things first. He gets the first one to eat and certain other types of precedents in daily life and daily relations. So the Rivash's basic argument is that if we see the Torah commanded us to honor a Kohen, well, it stands to reason that conversely, someone who disrespects a Kohen, someone who is rude and insulting to a Kohen, is worthy of an especially serious punishment. Rivash then goes on and has one line all the way at the end of the tshuva, which initiated something of a major controversy that reverberated down for 800 years or so, or 600 years until today. Rivash says, first Rivash just says that this is only true if the Kohen is a Kohen in good standing, if he's an observant Jew who follows the mitzvahs, particularly the mitzvahs of Kahuna, and he's a Talmud Chacham, and a proper Jew who behaves the way he's supposed to, if he's a Rasha, if he violates mitzvahs, if he's not Maaretz, then he doesn't have the same stature and the same privileges of a Kohen. He also goes on and says another exception to the rule that a Kohen gets special treatment, he says, is Kohanim Shebedarenu, Kohanim in our generation. Rivash was in North Africa in the 14th century or so. He says, Kohanim in our generation, She'ein lehem ksav hayachas. They're not certified Kohanim. They don't have proper documentation attesting to their yichus. Elam pechas kasim, like we have today. People have traditions and they're a Kohen. The family always considered itself Kohanim. We treat them as Kohanim. The minhag is, they get the first aliyah, and so on. But that's not the same thing as a certified, documented Kohen in the time of Chazal. And Chazal, in the Gemara, there are many sugyas about how do you establish kahuna? There are elaborate formal rules. What type of evidence is sufficient? In the time of Chazal, it seems they had very, very, very rigorous systems for how to establish kahuna. Today, all we have are informal family traditions, which aren't certified, there's no accountability. There's no real reliability to these traditions, Rivash says. Therefore, a Kohen today, we're not really convinced that he is a Kohen.
Yeah, mitochondrial DNA.
Yes, so recently there have been various studies that have traced microscopic markers in cells, mitochondrial DNA, to establish kahuna. So I'm not that familiar with the research, but I would point out one issue with that is that even if we accept the reliability of that 100%, there's still a problem, because even someone whose father is a Kohen may still not be a Kohen, because a Kohen who marries a Grusha, or a Kohen who marries a Chalala, or a Kohen who marries a Giyaris, or various other types of women, his children all lose the Kedusha of the Kahuna. So some post can raise this point, that even if we can establish the actual genealogy, that still might not be sufficient for us. Now the question is, how do you ever prove a negative? How can you ever prove, even in the time of Chazal, that some woman wasn't defiled somewhere? So, not so clear, but yes, that is an interesting point. Exactly what significance the exactly what significance the scientific tracing would be an interesting addition to this question.
But he took his aliyah first today.
Yes, everyone agrees he gets an aliyah, but that's where we're going now. The question is, of all the different rights, privileges, and responsibilities of Kohanim, are there any differences b'zman hazeh in contemporary times because of our uncertainty about whether Kohanim are really Kohanim or not? Aliyah he definitely gets, that's the one thing everyone agrees, and he still is Nosei Kapayim, he still Duchens, the custom is that today. But the question is, are there differences in Halacha? Rivash is opening the door for us and telling us that maybe we shouldn't give him all the privileges of Kohanim. So,
isn't one the Chala, for instance?
Yes, we'll get the Chala soon, yes. Chala is one of the important points. So, even just sticking to the area of the Rivash, of honor and respect, and there is actually a very interesting Magen Avraham in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. In Siman Reish Aleph, where the Magen Avraham brings the din of the Kiddashto, brings the din that even outside the shul, even outside the getting aliyahs, a Kohen is supposed to have certain precedence, supposed to get the first serving, or he is supposed to be honored and given certain precedences, and yet, the custom was, it seems that people weren't very strict about this. They weren't very diligent about this halacha. And the Magen Avraham is not the only one who noticed this. We had a sefer called Yifei Mara by an early Akron who also says that people in his time weren't very punctilious about this. So why not? What's the justification of people for not being very meticulous about this, about giving a Kohen precedence in ordinary daily affairs? So the Magen Avraham and this Yifei Mara, Rabbi Shmuel Yaffa, I think his name was, they both say that because of this Rivash, because we're not really convinced that our Kohanim are Kohanim, so even though the minhag of course is that they still get Kohen, they still Duchen, but we don't have the same mitzvah to honor them, and therefore people are, that's a limud zchus, not saying it's right necessarily, people are not so makbid anymore to give them the precedences that the halacha requires. Now throughout halacha, there are a number of other areas where the poskim also debated whether our Kohanim have the full status of Kohanim. Some of these areas were l'chumra, not to give the Kohen certain rights and privileges that he ought to have. Some of them were l'kula, to allow a Kohen to do things that he otherwise wouldn't be allowed to do. And there are major debates about some of them. So I just want to run through some of the major issues in which the poskim have debated whether the Kohanim of our time are full-fledged, bona fide, 100% certain Kohanim, or whether halacha recognizes the fact that we're not really all that certain that our Kohanim are absolutely Kohanim. The most controversial, the most hotly debated area has to do with marriage. A Kohen is prohibited from marrying certain classes of women. Midaraisa, the most common one is a Grusha. A Chalala, Midrabana, there are several others. A Chalutza, a Shvuya, basically a divorcee, a woman who had Chalitza, even a woman who was captive and held by non-Jews under dangerous circumstances, in certain circumstances. So the question was, when our Kohanim, do they still have all the Yisurim that used to be in the time of Chazal, or can we be more lenient based on the fact that we're not really sure of the Kohanim anyway? So here we have the Marashdam, Rav Shmuel di Medina, in the 16th century, one of the great Turkish poskim of the time. He didn't say flat out that it's mutter, chas v'sholom, nobody says that. But he had a certain case where there were other bases to be mekel, there was a doubt anyway, and he was talking about a shvuya, which is anyway not such a stringent isser because it's only a chumra, basically, of the Gemara. So with various other tzirufim, various other reasons to be lenient, he threw in this one too. He said that, especially today, since our Kohanim, as the Rivash says, are not really certainly Kohanim, we can be more lenient than they were in the time of the early poskim, we can be more lenient in allowing Kohanim to marry women who they otherwise wouldn't be allowed to marry. Now, if we accept this Marashdam, again, you have to know how far to take it. He himself only uses it by drabanan, with other reasons to be lenient. But if we accept this, this would be a very important tool in the post-sakes toolbox when he deals with such shilas. However, the very strong consensus of poskim rejects the Marashdam. There is some support. The Shvus Yaakov agrees to the Marashdam, but many, many other achronim, Sfardim, Ashkenazim, early ones, late ones, there's a fairly strong consensus, not like this Marashdam, that L'chumra, the Kohen, has to be Machmer. We have to forbid the Kohen to marry any woman who a real, true blue Kohen can marry. We're not nekel for a Kohen based on the fact that there is some doubt about his Yichus. Now, Chala is a very interesting case. The halacha is as follows. Real Chala, Daraisa Chala, can only be eaten by a Kohen, and the Kohen has to be tar. We don't have Kohanim who are tar because we're all Tameis. As we know, we've all been exposed to dead bodies. This week's Parasha, Paraduma, we don't have the par, we don't have the, we next week's parasha, we don't have the paradum anymore, so we're all tummy. So real challah is a moot point, the Kohen can't eat it because, I just said this week because I have to prepare my next week Sunday share, which is going to be on Parsha after that. I'm already starting to look through Parsha's Chukas, but this past week was Karach, but yes, anyway. So real challah is irrelevant, but the question is, challah's chutzlar, it's challah midrabbanan, it's also challah, you also have to treat it like challah, but there are certain leniencies. And one of the leniencies is that we're not so machmer on tumah. Certain tumas are still problems, tumah hayotze migufa, like nida, certain tumas are still problems, but tumas meis is not a problem. So in theory, if you have a kohen, and you make sure he doesn't have any of the tumah of nida, or balkeri, or zav, or any of the certain classes of bodily tumas, his own bodily fluids basically, such a kohen could eat challah. So there's a debate in the poskim whether we do this or not. So they talk about either a Kohen Gadol who went to the mikveh, or even more practically, a Kohen Katan. A minor Kohen who hasn't reached puberty, his body typically doesn't have those tumors that involve his own emissions of bodily fluids, the ones that are problematic. So if you had a minor Kohen, a Kohen who's 10 years old, or 5 years old, he really would be allowed in principle to eat challah of chutzlaretz, the challah that we have, though, that comes out of our kitchen. Do we do this or not? I've never seen this done, and the poskim have debated this again for 500 years. The consensus of Ashkenazi poskim is that we generally do not allow the kohen, even a minor kohen, to eat challah. There were certain minhagim that they used to once a year before Pesach, maybe, but in general, I think the custom today certainly is that we do not give. We burn the challah all the time. We don't give it to any kohen, even a kohen katan. Why? Some poskim said, practically speaking, a kohen, you know, we don't want to get involved with challah, kohanim, they're going to get the kids, they're going to crumble it, they're not going to handle it properly. But one of the main reasons given is this is back to this rivash. Well, l'chumra, at least, we're choshesh, that our kohanim are not really kohanim. Even if he's tar, he might not really be a kohen. He still have to give it to a kohen. Yisrael can't eat it. This is one of the reasons given why we don't eat challah at all. We invariably burn it. We don't rely on this possible dispensation to give it to a kohen katan.
Why that question more than truma?
Truma and chutz laretz we don't take off at all. There is no truma.
In baretz.
And in baretz, the trumas mace is a problem also. You can't eat truma when you're telling mace even.
Right. So I mean, but the same question as challah. You can't eat challah when you're telling mace.
No, challah chutz laretz you can. Challah chutz laretz is a special kula. It has it in challah. We separate challah, but it has more leniency. Another area where this comes up is Pidyon HaBen. There's a famous story about the goat. It's not fully reliable. There are several different versions of the story that contradict each other, but there's a story about the goat that when he was an adult, he was a Bechar, and he went around being poed to himself repeatedly from different Kohanim until, according to one version, until he found a Kohen named Rappaport. According to another version, it was a Kohen named Hamburger, or in the city of Hamburg, I forget which one it was. Moshe Sternbach has one version, other Sfarim have other versions. Until he found a kohen whose yichus he fully relied on, and then he didn't rely on his father's pidyon of him when he was a child. There are several different versions of the story, which are mutually exclusive, but according to some versions of the story, he didn't rely on his father's pidyon or his first few pidyons that he did because he wasn't really convinced that the kohanim who he dealt with were really kohanim. And the truth is, this point was raised earlier by Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden, in his Sheilas Yavit, says, a Kohen really, he says, should give back the money he gets from the father to the father because l'chumra yishvi padim. But the Kohen shouldn't really be so convinced he's a Kohen. He shouldn't keep the money. He should give it back to the father. And he says the same thing as the story of the goat. He says a person should really be padim himself repeatedly if he has more opportunities. And he says even someone whose father is a father or mother are levim. I never had a Pidyon HaBen because my mother came from Levium. My son didn't have a Pidyon HaBen because my wife comes from Levium. He says people like us should be poged themselves anyway, Lachumra, because who said the Levium? We don't know if Kohanim are real, we don't know if Levium are real. We should do that, he says. Except, he says, the son of a Kohen should not be poged himself because that would lead to kulas. If the Kohen starts thinking he's not really a Kohen, he'll marry women he's not supposed to, he'll be Metamei Lameisim, that'll lead to problems. But in general, he says, we don't treat Kohen Kahuna as reliable, and therefore we should be machmer and do multiple pidyons, or even levim should be podda. Again, I don't think that's the minhag. It's certainly not the minhag. The goat, according to some stories, did it, but it's certainly not widespread practice.
Wouldn't that be a bracha, Zricha?
You wouldn't make a bracha.
You just do without a bracha. Yeah.
One last area where this came up, it was something of a moot point, but it was nevertheless discussed heavily by the Achronim. In the mid-19th century, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, a great Talmud Chacham of that time, who was friendly with Rabbi Kmeger and other Acharim of that time, began a very early movement. He was a kind of proto-Zionist. He wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, be Makriv Karbanos. He had all kinds of plans to reinstate halachic society in Eretz Yisrael. And he corresponded with all the Gedolim of his time. He tried to get everyone on board with a plan to go to Eretz Yisrael and bring Karbanos. There were all kinds of obstacles that Acharonim raised. We have to find Bigdei Kahuna, we have to find the Mizbeach. Nachum Sefer raised a rather more practical objection. He said, he was writing to Rabbi Kmeger, his father-in-law, he wrote that, he says, it's not really going to work, he says. You want to ask the Sarai Yerushalayim, the Arab rulers of Yerushalayim, permission to bring a carbon? Not going to happen, he says. Captain Gadol, he's pretty tough about these things, he says. Nobody's allowed to go on the Har HaBayis, just like today, if he's not an Arab, if he's not a Muslim. Kisham Nivnet Beis Avodah shall have, that's where they have their mask. Ba'omrim, they say that Evan Shasiya, Ba'am Zakipa, the Evan Shasiya is under the Dome of the Rock, and they're not letting anybody on, he says. So the question is moot, he says. But when he discusses the various halachic objections that were raised, one of the main issues that were raised were, can we really find reliable Kohanim before Mashiach comes? Rav Kalischer's whole point was that he wanted to start the Avodah before Mashiach came already. So the Poskim raised numerous objections. One of them was, do we really have reliable Kohanim to do the Avodah? Rabbi Kmeger, that was one of his main objections, that we don't have reliable Kohanim, so we can't do the Avodah. Himself felt that was not such a problem. He felt that there's a special dispensation of Baruch Hashem Chelo. If someone who thinks he's a Kohen does the Avodah in good faith, Hashem says it's okay, even if you find out afterwards he wasn't really a Kohen, Hashem says it's fine, as long as you were operating in good faith. So the Chamsefer has a reason why it's not so important, but in any event, this was also a major debate about whether we can find reliable Kohanim as Manazet to do the Avodah. Again, the question was somewhat moot because we couldn't get to the Har HaBayis. There were other objections, but that's one other interesting case where the Poskim debated whether we have Kohanim. We're out of time. There are a few other cases they debated about duchening. Beis Ephraim said that's why we don't duchen every day, because we're not convinced about Kohanim. Why do we duchen on Yontif? That's a good question then. And some people say we don't do Tzaraas Bezman Hazeh because we don't have Kohanim. But again, these are some of the major cases the Poskim debated, but whether we have reliable Kohanim, Bein L'chumra, Bein L'kula.